The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 10. Ella. Taking one step at a time, one step at a time, again and again. Helen ran, the park silent around her, with only the sound of her steady breathing breaking the stillness. She had neglected her marathon training for the past few weeks, but that was over now. The stress was behind her. The public prosecutor interpreted Catherine Williams's suicide attempt as an admission of guilt. Melvin of the Inquisitor capitalized on the scandal with sensational headlines, dubbing Williams the beast in the body of a supermodel and the goddess who wants to shirk. The latter referred specifically to Williams' attempted suicide. Helen's favorite headline, however, proclaimed, "Twilight of the Gods, Catherine the Goddess Williams accused of murdering Seven." It was rumored that Douglas Melvin had already signed a multi-million-dollar exclusive book deal with Random House. "I should have shot that bastard," Helen thought as she crossed the Gothic Bridge. The morning mist blanketed the reservoir like a quilt. Helen's running shoes thudded against the path. At 4:30 in the morning, Central Park was nearly deserted, lending an illusion of seclusion in the heart of Manhattan. Helen cherished these brief moments of unfamiliar peace and silence. But today, it was clear she wouldn't enjoy it for long. She heard footsteps approaching. She waited for the runner to overtake her. But instead, he matched her pace. Helen glanced to the side and saw an impossibly long pair of legs. She had to look up to see the runner's face. Samantha Risk, prosecutor. "Good morning, detective," she greeted Helen. Helen returned the greeting, surprised. "Are you also training for the marathon?" asked the tall, beautiful woman. Her blonde hair framed her captivating blue eyes, and her body was adorned with freckles, adding an air of mystery to her appearance. Helen couldn't stand the woman. "Yep," she replied briefly, which essentially meant, "Let me jog in peace, beautiful prosecutor." But despite her reputation, Risk must not have been able to read Helen's mind, for she asked, "What's your time?" Helen sighed. Why did it always have to be women playing men's games? Samantha Risk clearly wanted to engage in a who pisses higher competition with her. She smiled at Risk, suppressing thoughts of hearty Italian curses regarding the prosecutor's romantic preferences. 3:23, she replied. "Not bad. Really, not bad." Of course, this beast of a prosecutor had a better time than Helen, otherwise she wouldn't have asked. "Yours?" Helen inquired, following the rules of the game. 2:59. That was obvious. "Why?" Risk asked. "You have the longer stilts." To Helen's surprise, Samantha Risk burst into laughter, a joyful, compassionate sound that filled the air. "At summer camp, the boys used to call me Flamingo." "And what do they call you now?" Helen asked pointedly. Risk frowned. "What's wrong with you, Helen? We've got the Williams case in the bag." Helen didn't respond immediately. It took her a moment to finally say, "What if she is innocent?" "What do you mean?" The prosecutor paused. "Wasn't there once such a thing as a presumption of innocence?" Helen asked with a hint of sarcasm. The prosecutor blew a strand of hair out of her face, making her look like a jogger Barbie to Helen. "You're right. In dubio pro reo. The law presumes everyone innocent until proven otherwise. This applies to Catherine Williams. After all, We found her DNA at one of the crime scenes. Isn't that proof enough? And her suicide attempt is almost as good as a signed confession, Samantha explained. And don't forget, nobody attacked Ella Henson. If there really was another culprit, as you seem to believe, why hasn't this imaginary killer gone after the last of the Magnificent Seven? Imaginary killer, nicely put, darling. Helen shook her head in thought. Maybe the actual killer is just waiting for the police protection for the Hensons to be withdrawn, she remarked. Well, that's already happened, detective. Helen abruptly stopped, kicking up gravel with the tips of her shoes. What? Come on, keep walking, Risk said. You'll throw me off my rhythm. Then don't let me stop you, Helen replied, pulling out her cell phone. I need to make a call. Prosecutor Risk shrugged and jogged away. It was fun talking to you, Helen, she called over her shoulder. See you soon. Then she vanished into the mist like a Celtic goddess. I usually throw off my rhythm, Helen mimicked her. Stupid bitch, she cursed as she dialed Davis's number.
Excuse me, madam?
The cab driver asked. Excuse me, what? Ella replied.
Where are you headed?
Where do I want to go? She asked.
Yes, where do you want to go, madam?
Ella struggled to compose herself. The alcohol and the sheer amount of drugs she had consumed were taking their toll. She took a deep breath to clear her head. The scent of expensive aftershave lingered on her skin, and her cleavage felt raw. Then she recalled the night she had spent with a man she had met at the club. The scratch of his 3-day beard still lingered on her skin. Once her police protection had been lifted, she simply had to go somewhere, among people, which basically meant among a man. When the red horror descended on Holly Golightly, she went to Tiffany's for breakfast. Ella lay under a man and allowed herself to be used. This realization made her burst into giggles.
Madam?
The cab driver asked again. He was Pakistani and seemed a little afraid of her Nordic presence. Hmm? Ella replied, not entirely focused. She noticed she was dressed in a dark brown man's leather jacket. A glance underneath explained why. Apart from the jacket, she wasn't wearing anything. Her fingers fumbled around until she found her dress and pumps. The underwear was missing. Wrong. She hadn't been wearing any. Now she remembered. She checked the pockets of the leather jacket and found a half-full pack of cigarettes and a diamond-studded lighter. She lit one for herself. God, that felt good.
Sorry, madam. No smoking in the cab,
said the Pakistani cab driver. My best friend is a serial killer, she informed him, as if that explained everything. Well, from her point of view, it did. According to the police and the media, her best friend Catherine had skinned and murdered 5 people. If that wasn't a good reason to get the red shivers, she didn't know what was. Ella rummaged further in the pockets of the leather jacket and found a money clip with dollar bills.
Miss, no smoking here,
the cab driver insisted. Ella pulled a Ben Franklin out of the money clip and slipped it through the slot in the plastic window. Park Avenue, she said, blowing the smoke against the window with relish. The driver looked at the bill, then at Ella, shrugged, and drove off. Ella leaned back and closed her eyes. Why, Kathy? She thought. Why? 2 cigarettes later, the cab pulled up in front of her apartment building on Park Avenue. She handed the cab driver a Ulysses S. Grant to say goodbye, and then walked barefoot, her dress and pumps in hand, into the lobby. Fred, the concierge, didn't bat an eyelid when he saw her come in wearing nothing but a leather jacket. This wasn't even her most extravagant outfit. His favorite was the time she stormed in clad only in bath foam. Miss Henson didn't seem in the mood for a chat. Don't even ask, she growled, holding her free arm up expectantly. Fred understood the gesture. He tossed her the key to her apartment, and she walked towards the elevator. Before entering, she turned around briefly and blew Fred a kiss. You're a darling, she breathed. Then the door closed, and she disappeared. It was the last time he saw Ella Henson alive. The hot jet of the shower enveloped her in a protective veil of water and steam. The red horror crumbled away and finally disintegrated into dust. A fuck and a hot shower. That's all it takes, she realized. She opened the glass door, dried herself off, slipped into a kimono, wrapped a small towel around her shoulders, and rubbed her hair dry with it. Then she moved to the wash basin with the large mirror, held the towel under her chin for modesty, removed her glass eye, and stowed it in the designated box. Next, she slipped on a white eye patch. Hardly anyone knew about Ella's disability. She had started injecting heroin at 16. When she noticed the puncture scars between her toes during a shoe shoot and lost a few lucrative jobs as a result, a friend showed her how to inject into her eyeball. This worked well for a few years, but then she used a dirty needle. The resulting infection was so severe that her eye could not be saved. Shit happens. The doorbell rang. Ella didn't know what time it was, but it was clearly too early for visitors. She approached the door and looked through the peephole. A handsome young man on crutches stood in the hallway. "I'm not buying anything. Get out," she shouted through the door. "Maggie, please, Maggie, let me in," the young man shouted dejectedly. He had obviously been drinking, swaying back and forth on his crutches like a sailor in heavy seas. "No, Maggie lives here," Ella shouted back, annoyed. "Maggie, please," the young man pleaded again. "Damn it," Ella growled, retreating to the bathroom to put her glass eye back in. Ella yanked the door open. "You're not Maggie," the drunken man groaned in astonishment. "That's right, I'm not Maggie. Get lost. But I have to see Maggie." "Does this Maggie have a surname?" "Sure." "And what is it?" "Miller, Maggie Miller, but you're not Maggie Miller." "Miller," Ella mused. "Oh boy," she finally sighed. "Maggie Miller lives in 1903. This is 1803. You're on the wrong floor, mister." "Wrong? Oh, shit, I'm sorry, then you can't be Maggie. Oh, shit." "That's right." She tried to close the door, but one crutch got caught between her and the doorframe. "Wait a minute, watch out, I need those." He struggled to pull the crutch free, losing his balance and swaying like a felled tree that hadn't yet decided which way to fall. "Watch out," shouted Ella, but he was already tumbling forward. In a parody of a stormy embrace, they both crashed onto Ella's plush-carpeted hallway. "I'm so sorry," moaned the man. "It's all right," groaned Ella, nearly crushed by his weight. "Are you hurt?" "I don't think so," she replied as she caught her breath. "Good," the man said in a suddenly sober voice, and slammed his fist into Ella's face. "Yes?" asked Fred as a small, sweaty woman in a jogging suit approached his counter. She pulled out a police badge. "Detective Helen Louisiani, NYPD. I need to see Ella Henson urgently." "You're in luck. She rushed in here about an hour ago. Apartment 1803, Fred replied, keeping the circumstances of Ella Henson's arrival to himself. Remaining silent proved worthwhile. At Christmas, Henson rewarded his discretion with a very generous tip. 1803? Louisiani asked, turning pale. "The 18th floor," she whispered. "That's right." Fred watched as she walked over to the elevator with slumped shoulders, pressed the button, and impatiently waited. "Just be patient," he called to her. "The elevator's just gone down to the basement. It'll be a moment." The policewoman looked at him. "Only just?" "Yes, a few minutes ago." "Why?" "Shit," she cursed, pulling a small handgun from a holster on her calf. "Wow, lady," Fred began. "Call 911. Tell your colleagues to send reinforcements. Tell them it's about Ella Henson." "What? What's going on here?" Fred asked. "Don't ask. Just do it," she shouted. "And when my colleague Davis arrives, tell him I'm in the basement." "Sure thing," Fred reached for the phone. The policewoman hurried into the stairwell. Fred looked after her and shook his head. "Women," he muttered to himself as he dialed the police number. "Ella," a voice whispered. "Ella." She opened her healthy eye and stared at her own glassy one. Initially, she believed it was hovering in the air before her, but soon she identified the black glove gripping it in front of her face. She wanted to scream, but someone had sealed her mouth shut with tape. "Ella, Ella, Ella," said the voice that likely belonged to the hand. "You don't do things like that." "What?" Ella gasped in agony. Her arms throbbed in pain. She looked up and realized they were handcuffed to a pipe that ran beneath the low ceiling. Even her own, maybe. She had put some on her bedside table. Shit happens. "Was Detective Louisiani here just now?" a man called out to Fred. Fred pointed his thumb toward the stairwell and asked, "Detective Davis?" "Yes." "I'm supposed to tell you she's down in the basement. It's about Ella Henson," and your colleagues are on their way. Basement, Ella Henson, backup. Davis's thoughts raced. God damn it, Helen, we've already been through this, he cursed. Expecting trouble, he armed himself and rushed after Helen downstairs. Well, I'm telling you, Fred muttered. Women. Ella's head flew to the side as the glove hit her in the face. How dare you, unworthy one? The glove snapped at her. Do you have any idea what trouble you've caused me? And for what? Nothing. I almost consecrated your rotten skin to the goddess. Ella whimpered. An indescribable stench penetrated her nose. Her healthy eye swelled. She blinked with difficulty. The glove's face was staring straight at her. Someone had crudely wrapped it in bloody bandages, securing it with adhesive tape. In between, she vaguely recognized the stinking, rotting scraps of skin. Narrow slits concealed the eyes and mouth. Shall I tell you why I allow you the mercy of my face? Yes? Shall I tell you? The stinking grimace asked in a whisper. So you can see with your last breath what a noble creature you could have become, you false snake. Then the face vanished. Ella felt cold, sharp metal pressing against her neck. This is the unmistakable red horror. Now I know, she thought with a strangely calm demeanor. Then a large cut severed her throat. No! Shouted Helen as she stepped through the open door of the boiler room. Ella Henson was hanging from the ceiling, bound hand and foot like a piece of slaughtered cattle, her throat slit. Helen rushed to her, pressed her hands over the gaping wound and sobbed. No, no, no. The woman had one eye missing, and the other was swollen. Helen didn't even realize that the dying woman was trying to tear it open. A soft moan escaped her injured larynx. What? Helen asked, carefully removing the tape from Ella's mouth. She whispered. Monster? Ella nodded. Min. Mouth? No. Man? Ella nodded again. Has? What does the man have? Ella shook her head. Skin. What? Skin. Skin? Helen asked, choking back tears. Ella nodded. And died. Please don't, Helen pleaded, even though she knew it was already too late. Madre di Dio, perdona me. I'm so sorry. So sorry, she sobbed. Helen, cried Davis. Oh, God. He was at her in a single bound. Helen, are you hurt? She crouched on the floor next to Ella Henson's body. No, she replied dismissively, wiping the tears from her face with her bloody hand. Then she stood up. Davis tried to help her, but she sharply refused. Don't touch me. He looked at the dead woman and shook his head in disbelief. The meaning of Ella Henson's brutal murder was clear. Helen, he began, I'm sorry. She silenced him with a look, staring sorrowfully at the dead woman. Tell her that, Davis. She suddenly burst out laughing, the sound echoing off the walls, false and bitter. Oh, wait, you can't, because she's dead. God damn it, Helen, She glanced at him again, and once more he fell silent. Approaching him with her fist clenched, it seemed she wanted to hit him, but then she changed her mind, turned away, and walked toward the exit. Where are you going? He asked anxiously. She turned around wearily, scrutinizing him for a long time, tears glistening in her eyes. It's none of your business anymore, she finally said, continuing her walk. What do you mean? He called after her. She stopped and sighed, then returned, withdrawing her gun and badge and pressing both into Davis's hand. He stared at her in amazement. Are you completely out of your mind? He asked. Helen smiled. Go to hell, Davis, she said, turning and leaving.
Goddess locked up in her cell. Something's not right, she can't tell. Ella's waking up confused in a stranger's jacket, slightly bruised. Oh, Ella, don't open that door. Oh, baby, don't walk on that floor. A man with a crutch is coming for you. Oh, Ella, sweet Ella, your time. Coming home at break of day, never know when it's her last way. When the drunken stranger falls, fate will eat you whole. Oh, oh. Detectives running fast,
but it's too late.
This breath will be her last. Breathe her last. Lord have mercy on her soul. Oh Lord, have mercy now.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital audiobook podcasts and its author Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.